This is Inside Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN. It's our daily in-depth look at people and issues that are shaping the local area. Inside Douglas County is presented by Concrete Builder Supply. Now, Inside Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
Afternoon. Thanks for being here as we cover all kinds of topics around Douglas County. Thought it was time to get an update on Douglas Timber Operators and a lot of the issues they deal with. The Executive Director, Matt Hill, is in. Thanks for coming in.
Good afternoon.
So, overall, how is your membership doing? How's the local industry doing these days?
It's a tough time, for sure. I mean, we've had several mill closures in the area across Western Oregon over the last several months. You've got low demand for lumber products across the country, consumer uncertainty, high mortgage rates, high build construction loan rates, those types of things that impact construction, which drives our lumber economy here in Douglas County. That being said, you know, our companies are doing what they can to stay afloat and be efficient and weather the storm and come out the other side like they always do.
You know, we've had the mills shutting down in the past couple of years, I guess, in particular. Are you worried that trend is going to continue?
I am worried. You know, we've got a couple of headwinds against us. One is, you know, just the market conditions that I just mentioned. The other is log supply. And, you know, we have a shortage of raw material. The federal government continues to underperform in its timber production. Every summer we lose more inventory to fires on federal, tribal, state, private forest lands, which reduces future availability of those areas for logging and feeding the mills. So things continue to get dicier, and really the main factor in my mind is making sure that log supply is available in the future.
Well, and with a new administration in Washington, D.C., do you see the potential for an impact there, maybe not immediately, but an impact in the near to mid future on federal timber policy?
I think the intention is there. It certainly would be consistent with other things the Trump administration is prioritizing, like energy. From what I hear, that's going to be a bigger priority on these lands. However, it can't be done necessarily in an executive order. There's laws, there's regulations, there's processes, there's courts, there's court precedent, all of which impact the management of federal lands in Douglas County and elsewhere. So there has to be a comprehensive strategy that hopefully starts with the top in the executive branch and then filters down to appropriate actions at the BLM and Forest Service.
Well, and it seemed like during the first Trump administration, we really were close to at least halfway through it before you started to see some bigger impacts. And then by a point, you know, after that, then it was back into the election cycle. The other side of the aisle won that one, and things shifted back a bit the other way. So it does seem to move awfully slow.
It moves not necessarily slow. It's a pendulum that moves very fast. And the pendulum moves back and forth. And you're right, there were things that the previous Trump administration attempted to put in place that would have facilitated greater timber production on federal lands in Western Oregon in particular. Some of those actions were reversed by the incoming Biden administration. Unclear what will happen in this Trump administration. There's also, you know, larger discussions about the Northwest Forest Plan, the management of ONC lands, et cetera, here in Western Oregon. Do we chart a new course? Do we, you know, just try to fix the existing plans and regulations? And there's a lot of discussion happening with the counties, with the industry, with the congressional delegation, and with the agencies about what that should be. But right now, it's a failure. It's a failure in terms of timber production, a huge failure. It's a failure for recreation. You know, when was the last time you could hike the whole North Umpqua Trail? I mean, it's closed because of fire and falling trees. It's a failure for air quality. There was a news story just last night that Roseburg's in the top 10 countries in the nation in terms of impact of wildfire smoke. So we are in the thick of it, literally, and something needs to change.
You know, it was interesting. That initial story came out last week, and I was looking at the cities listed, and it took me a few minutes to get farther into the story where Roseburg came up as number six. And you think about the entire nation, entire country, and areas that are much more industrialized, higher population, factories, all those things that we don't have yet. The way the data was measured by the research scientists in Washington, for a four-year period, to have the sixth worst air in the country, not really something that is helpful about promoting the area.
It's not the top 10 list I'd like to be on for this community, for sure. And that smoke comes with very serious health effects. There's, you know, particulate matter. There's carcinogens. There's very nasty things that affect everyone from babies to mature and old people. And it really presents a public health situation that we need to be more worried about, and taking the forest health situation more seriously. And what do we need to do to reduce the size, the scale, and intensity of forest fires out there? And again, there doesn't seem to be a major plan to do anything differently. And in fact, the plan revision that we're looking at for national forests in Oregon it appears to just be a simple tweak of the existing plan, which is leave 80-90% of the forest alone, don't do anything, and try to do something on the remaining 10%. And that's not going to change the path of wildfire in Oregon.
You know, you're talking about the smoke impacts. The other thing about that, it seems like that oftentimes it's not like you're breathing the air in and you get sick tomorrow and start having a condition. It's stuff that might impact you 10 years down the road.
There's neurological impacts. There's been studies up in Northeast Washington about the effect on birth weight of babies. So for pregnant women inhaling smoke, I mean, the list goes on, and it continues to get worse. And we just need to take it more seriously.
So when you look at other, do you see bright spots at all in the timber industry?
The bright spots are, you know, we have a talented workforce. We are tough. We are resilient. These companies have weathered, you know, many storms before, and they're trying to adapt to these circumstances. I think there's probably reason to believe that lumber prices will climb a little bit and provide some stability to the industry in the coming months. And also that, you know, we just happen to be in the most productive wood basket in the world. So we continue to have a great set of particularly private forests to operate, and local companies like Lone Rock and others that, you know, manage those private forest lands and sell those logs into our market. You know, that continues to be out there. My concern is on the federal side, but, you know, right now our mills are virtually entirely reliant on private logs. And 30 years ago, it was the opposite. They were primarily reliant on federal logs. And so they've evolved. They continue to evolve. But as market conditions tighten, it really puts the squeeze on the surviving mills.
And while there's a lot of talk about nationally and certainly in Oregon, rural Oregon, the need for more housing, which you would think on one level would be helpful to the industry. The supply piece, though, is where it's a question.
That's one of the questions with housing, for sure, is the affordability of homes. You know, I think that the availability of jobs, I mean, our community, the number of jobs provided by the forest products sector has reduced dramatically because of mill closures, layoffs, market changes, and so it's shrunk, you know, the jobs that we can provide. The jobs that we do provide now tend to pay higher than the county average and the state average. And so there's still a lot of benefit to going into those industries, whether it's at the bottom level or working your way up all the way to the top.
Now, we had a few months back, Portland International Airport kind of completed redoing a part of the facility there, and I think building a new segment as well. And mass timber factored into that. Is that helpful at all?
I would like to think it is. I would like to think that the people in the Portland area who go through that airport think about where that wood comes from, and it didn't just show up out of thin air in the airport, and that it was grown on a forest A lot of tribes in Oregon produce wood for that project. That wood came from trees that were grown in a forest and cut by a logger and trucked to a mill and manufactured by mill workers and then trucked up to Portland. And if they want to see more of that beautiful design and beautiful products, they need to support what we're doing down here in Douglas County.
Is it sort of maybe a potential disconnect? I mean, while people like the architectural look of that, and I've heard just rave reviews from people who've gone through there, is it a little bit sometimes like the kid that likes hamburgers but has no idea that the you know, wherever the beef comes from is not the store where his parents got it?
I think it's the same disconnect between the food on your plate and where it comes from, or the power that is powering our interview right now and where it comes from, or the wood that builds your home or your airport and where it comes from. And my hope is that, you know, through organizations like mine and others in the natural resources sector, we do a better job at reminding people where these things come from and what it takes to produce them. Because if we don't care, then those things will no longer be produced in the United States. And other countries with worse environmental regulations and worse labor standards will produce them happily and send them here, and we can export all of those benefits to those countries.
All right, more with Matt Hill when we come back. The interview, a podcast after one at 541radio.com, 1246, News Radio, 93.9 FM and 1240, KQEN. Inside Douglas County, 1249. Lars Larson coming up at 1. David Littlejohn with True Wealth Radio. That is on the way at 4 o'clock. Matt Hill, Executive Director of Douglas Timber Operators, with us now. As we look to go around the curve towards spring, start to think about summer, and I've even heard early discussions about firefighters and fire season. Any early data out there that you've accessed about how things might look this spring, summer, and fire season?
I'd give it another month or so, and we usually bring DFPA into our public breakfast meeting in April and or May to talk about fire season outlook. We still have a couple months or at least several weeks where we can get a big dump of snow, which is nice. The problem we face here in Douglas County with fire season, which is different than, you know, 10 or 15 years ago, is that we keep accumulating dead wood from previous fires. And so whether it's hot or cool or wet or dry, you know, we still have more and more fuels out there. And so that exacerbates whatever the weather conditions might be.
Now, do you, I've done interviews with numerous folks on both sides of the aisle that talk about the need for thinning and going in and doing different things. A lot is said, but it doesn't seem like as much gets done.
We're trying to get more done. It's a challenge, particularly on the federal lands. There's a group of stakeholders that have been working with the Umpqua National Forest to try to get some more cross-boundary work done, where, you know, maybe a private landowners doing a fuel break or a thinning and hopefully do some complementary work on the Forest Service side of the boundary. So, you know, that process is kind of in the beginning, but I hope that it picks up steam as we go. The state of Oregon has been doing a lot of good neighbor authority projects, in particularly in southern Douglas County, fuels reduction, we just need to be doing more of it across the landscape.
Now, we're 4.5 years after Archie Creek. How is the land faring up there?
Depends whose property you're looking at. If you look at private timberland up there, Rose Brook Forest Products, Lone Rock, folks like that, they removed dead material immediately after the fire. They replanted, and those trees have been growing for several years, and they're beginning to look really good. And you'll start to see those slopes greening up on private industrial timberland. For the most part on federal land, the dead trees were left in place. They are falling over. They're falling on trails. They're, don't hike Susan Creek on a windy day. Trees are falling. And underneath those dead trees is a sea of ceanothus and scotch broom and blackberry and other shrubs and hardwoods that are replacing that Doug fir forest. And so in many places within Archie Creek on federal land, you are not going to see a conifer forest for hundreds of years, if ever.
And if the planting is not going done and these other trees are coming in voluntarily, I mean, it's a long-term shift.
It's a conversion of the forest type. That's the technical word. And we see it all over the North Umpqua and the South Umpqua Basin is conversion of conifer forest to hardwood and other species. And if private industry went up and logged federal land and let that happen, we'd be in jail. But when it happens, when a fire comes through and federal agencies aren't able to respond and reforest that site properly, it's fine. And I think that's a real problem that we have to deal with at a social level is what are our long-term expectations of these forest lands? Do we want them to be forests? Do we want supposedly many of them to be old growth forests? Well, guess again, fire is converting them to brushlands.
Now, what about the people up there? You are probably one of the more knowledgeable folks about a lot of the impacts from Archie Creek, and I know you've talked to a lot of people and probably still do up there.
Some of the homes have been rebuilt. Many of them have not, or if they were rebuilt, the people who lived there beforehand no longer live there. A lot of folks just weren't able to financially stay up there, and they've left that site or they've left the area entirely. Others have been able to rebuild fine. I know that, you know, people continue to struggle up there. The landscape is very different. It's unrecognizable in certain places. But the lasting impacts of that fire up there, you know, continue to be experienced. And the Glide community has a lot of healing to do still. I know that Glide Revitalization continues to do very important work up there. And, you know, they've got a daycare program started and they're working on other things to provide additional resources for the community of Glide.
One of the things you've talked about a lot in the past is the Rock Creek Fish Hatchery. I know that's come up in some discussions with lawmakers recently. Kind of give us your take of where things stand there.
It's a tough one. The state of Oregon, the Oregon Fish and Wildlife Commission, terminated the summer steelhead hatchery program first after the Archie Creek fire impacted the hatchery. There's been multiple lawsuits by Douglas County, Umpqua Fishery Enhancement Derby, against that decision, has not been successful. On the hatchery rebuild itself, the state of Oregon has, we believe, something around $17 million in insurance money. They could be applying for FEMA federal money for rebuilding. They've stated their intention to file a lawsuit against Pacific Power for money for the hatchery, yet Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife is not prioritizing the rebuilding of that hatchery. They conducted a statewide assessment that ranks Rock Creek extremely low. They do not have a proposal in which Rock Creek gets rebuilt. That's something I personally have a problem with. That's something that I think most people in this community have a problem with. We have asked Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife to host a public meeting down here. I think that's going to happen. So I hope that they hear from this community about the importance of Rock Creek from a cultural standpoint, from a visiting, you know, the hatchery and throwing some fish food in the pond, and also for the fish it produces in our rivers, and everyone from fishing guides to little kids to being able to have that enjoyment.
And even if they were to move in a more positive direction towards what you're seeking, fish hatcheries are not rebuilt overnight. And so here we are 4.5 years later. If it turns to a yes at some point, you've still got quite a long road ahead.
True, but the hatchery is somewhat functioning now, even though it burned, because what didn't burn were the concrete raceways in which these are the pools in which young fish are kept. The pumps have been reestablished. It still pulls water from the North Umpqua in the summer. There's a temporary portable incubation system up there. So fish are being raised at Rock Creek right now, even though the hatchery wasn't rebuilt. And so what really all that it takes to make the hatchery fully functional again is probably, you know, a hatch house. There's been one up there since 1900-ish. Some housing for a hatchery superintendent. They've got portable housing up there right now. And some water treatment to deal with some of the summer month heat issues. So it's semi-functioning now. They wouldn't be doing it from scratch.
Real quick before we go, how did the Fishery Enhancement Derby go this year?
Fantastic. Raised record amounts of money, and we're looking forward to awarding that to fishery improvement projects throughout the Umpqua Basin.
And what kind of turnout did you have at your big fundraiser?
About 750 people. So a great showing, and people were extremely generous with their resources.
And what about watching kids that were out at some of the events?
That's always the best part of that week, and we always find that about 75% of kids that participate in our events have never been fishing, never been in a boat, and that changes with us, and this year they left with a fishing pole in their hand.
All right, Matt Hill, Executive Director of the Douglas Timber Operators, thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having me, Kyle.
1258 News Radio, 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
Listening to Inside Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN. A daily look at the people and issues that are shaping Douglas County. It's presented by Concrete Builder Supply. The show will be available as a podcast in just a few minutes at 541radio.com. So share it around and let others who weren't listening live know about today's show. Inside Douglas County is a public affairs presentation of Brook Communications. Stay connected with local news and information. News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.